normally the Fed, you know, people just kind of go, whatever. But in this case, when the Federal Reserve drops interest rates after 4 years and drops it by 0.5%, that's significant. Why? CBS's Joe Ling Kent.
After months of anticipation, the Federal Reserve aggressively reduced the cost of borrowing for the first time in 4 years with a 0.5-point rate cut.
Our patient approach over the past year has paid dividends.
The central bank sending rates down from their more than 20-year high.
What message are you trying to send American consumers, the American people, with this unusually large rate cut?
You know, the U.S. economy is in a good place, and our decision today is designed to keep it there.
So we're going to have some details of what this actually means to people. But in general, David, it's, as you heard, this is good news overall for the economy, for inflation, and should help a lot of people over time. They anticipate a continuing drop in rates.
Well, the one thing I would say is that, you know, having watched the market fairly closely some time back, perhaps there could be, because if you check, the Dow did close up yesterday, but the Nasdaq was down. And part of the concern might be that maybe because the Fed cut interest rates that much, that there's some concerns about, you know, what that may mean for the economy as well. So it's always hard to determine exactly how the market is going to react to things.
That's so true. So you have all these experts that, you know, spend their entire day, their entire careers studying all this. And when it comes down to it, it's like the weather.
Sure, you're right.
There's never 100% guarantee for anything.
Right.
But in this case, it's a general indication for everybody that the economy is moving in the right direction.
And so basically, I mean, it's good news for consumers. So if you'd been trying to refinance a loan or something, at least it should be a little bit less expensive now to do that. The interest rate should come down on doing that. But again, pointing out before, on the flip side, if you're relying on savings to help tide you over, if that's the foundation of your retirement plan, you're going to see a lower interest rate paid out, obviously, now on things like a checking with interest account, a savings account, certificates of deposit, and so on. So there's a mixed bag. You know, a lot of people, if they're borrowing money, they'll be happy. If you're saving, you may not be as happy.
What else are people talking about? New cannabis legislation, a bill introduced in Harrisburg for Pennsylvania. And they're trying to find, and this is a bipartisan bill that would legalize recreational marijuana in the state of Pennsylvania. For those that don't know, medical marijuana has been around a long time now, for the past 5 years. So what about recreational marijuana? Are they thinking this has a real chance to pass?
It's hard to tell, because I believe they've tried this a couple of times over the past 5 years as well to try and do this, at least if not more than a couple of times. The difference this time is, apparently, they would use the money that's raised from the taxes on legal marijuana to help fund things like addiction recovery and law enforcement and so on and so forth. But a lot of people, you know, I know Colin Dunlap was talking about this on his show a couple of weeks ago. It's hard to tell that it's not already legal in Pennsylvania, because so many places where you go, you know, cars passing by and so on, you smell it all over the place these days.
Yeah, and it smells like, for the most part,
skunk.
Yeah. In fact, now you can't tell when you're driving whether there's actually a skunk.
I'm pretty sure there's no skunk going through the Fort Pitt Tunnel.
Yeah. And if you don't know, Ohio has legalized recreational marijuana. New York, New Jersey, Washington, D.C.'s had it, the entire country of Canada. So it seems at some point it will happen here. And my question, and we'll find out, how will they handle the regulation? Like yesterday we talked to the press secretary, basically, for the Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board, mm-hmm. about the new happy hour and the other regs that they've expanded. And I wonder who will be the monitor arm of the government to make sure this all rolls out well.
I wonder if they would just expand that to be a new duty under the PLCB.
That's what I was thinking. Just add that under their umbrella. But we'll see if this gets real legs. You know, obviously they've talked about it for many, many years, but it looks like it's coming to a vote. And with the bipartisan support, which it hasn't always had, there's a chance that it will. And also the spotted lantern flies. I found out from entomologist Dr. Chad Gore, who we will talk to at the bottom of this half hour, that this is a particularly active season for the spotted lantern flies. He says this is seasonal. If you see them in swarms, that's common behavior. Expect to see that continue. It's basically egg laying season.
Mm-hmm.
So there you know.
What do they want? Well, I guess he'll tell us, but what do they want people to do if they see those eggs?
They're telling people not to smash them, to scoop them, but scoop them to where?
Right.
Right?
Right.
For the record, though, they don't bite people. They're not a danger to people directly.
No, but I'd like to see somebody who's skilled enough in gymnastics to be able to scoop them, because if you see them and you try to step on them, they zoom away like...
They jump at you. Last night, I was down on the south side, and they seem to be proliferating there, right where the Steelers and the Pirates mm-hmm. have their facility, all along the river there. And a couple of them, I felt this, you know, that feeling that something's on your neck, and then I grabbed it. It was giant. It looked like a bat. But don't worry, Aaron. They don't bite people. They just destroy the planet and vegetation, so... Nothing to be worried about.
They were pretty bad at the lower parking lot here last year. I haven't seen as many this year yet, but maybe it's still early in the season.
So we'll find out from Dr. Chad Gore what you should do, or should you really even be worried about it. Coming up at the bottom of this half hour in the Big K Morning Show, that's what people are talking about. This is the Big K Morning Show. Download our free Odyssey app, AUDACY. Take us with you wherever you go. And I think I'll give our early listeners a chance to get a little laugh. Nick Swardson, who is a stand-up, he's an actor, has been on Reno 911, worked with Adam Sandler, is coming to Carnegie of Homestead Music Hall November 24th. He is very popular, and we'll give you a couple of tickets, 412-922-1020. 412-922-1020. Aaron, what number do you want? Again, 1 to 1 million. Your choice. You're the one that has to answer the phone.
We'll do caller number 10.
All right. Caller number 10. We'll give you some tickets. We'll do it again tomorrow. Try to find something good to give you every day here on the Big K Morning Show. We're going to check in with our entomologist, who is Dr. Chad Gore, about the spotted lantern flies, but also this infestation of mice at this senior high-rise in Blonox, which you saw the residents talking. I mean, it's really disturbing. And, you know, so we got an issue with mice in some places. That seems to be not a big deal. How about in Florida? They have python issues. So, I mean, there's stuff, when you walk around town, if you're walking around a park or taking a walk on a trail here, for the most part, there's nothing that can eat you, right? In Florida, you've got the alligators, you've got these giant poisonous snakes, and then you have pythons. So how much money would you need to wade into a Florida swamp in the middle of the night and wrestle a 15-foot Burmese python to the death? Well, a guy just won Florida's annual python challenge, catching 20 of the giant invasive snakes, scoring himself $10,000, $131 per snake. Oh, wait, that doesn't make sense, which could easily have you for lunch. Second place caught one fewer, but won only $2,500. So there's... these pythons, if you don't know, I've spent a lot of time in Florida, especially if you go out near the Everglades. These are an invasive species. They're not native to, and if you've never seen the Everglades, it's pretty expansive. It's actually a really cool place to go. But pythons are an issue. Now, that's something you don't have to worry about here. Alligators, once in a while there's one floating around in Beaver County or somewhere. And pythons. But we do have spotted lantern flies, but they don't eat you. at least that we know of. So we'll talk to Dr. Chad about that. This is the Big K Morning Show. I want to congratulate Bernadette Chasler of Delmont. She's got a pair of tickets to see Nick Swardson, stand-up comedian, actor, writer, producer at the Carnegie Homestead Music Hall, November 24th. Do it again tomorrow. And right now, I can see you, Dr. Chad Gore, from Ehrlich Pest Control, an entomologist. You can see him, too, if you check out our stream at kdkradio.com. He's on our video link. Doc, how you doing this morning?
I'm good. Thank you.
You got to be busy. People always asking you about these pesky spotted lanternflies. Some people say they see swarms of them. Other people say, well, I haven't seen that many this year. What is the status of the infestation in southwestern Pennsylvania this year?
Well, I mean, clearly they're still here. We've been talking about several times some of the patterns that we've been seeing in different parts of the state. So it's not surprising that some people are saying that they don't really see that many of them, while others are saying that they see a lot of them. I tend to be in the latter part of that rather than the former where I live. So I'm getting quite a few of them. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah. Well, let's dispel some rumors too. First of all, they are not biting people. They're not attacking people, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, that's absolutely correct. They are not biting people. While they have what's referred to as piercing, sucking mouth parts, it's more for plants. So, you know, in order to feed off of the juices in the plants, you know, they've got the right mouth parts for that. But it's not like mosquito mouth parts, you know, where they're designed to penetrate skin and so forth. Now, and I was just having this conversation with my wife last night about spotted lanternflies and how they seem to kind of land on you for some reason.
Right.
And I think this is not my own personal opinion. But I think that they kind of see people maybe as sort of a vertical structure, like a tree or, you know, a lamppost or something like that, that they can land on. So they probably just don't know any better.
Yeah, either that or they want to hitch a ride, even though, you know. All right, that said, while they're not a real threat to humans in terms of biting, they are very much a threat to trees and crops. So what kind of devastation, because we've been warned about this, can they do?
Yeah. So there's not a whole lot of damage that they do to the trees other than when they produce their honeydew and then basically cover the tree, the trunk, and the ground below with our honeydew, which creates that sooty mold. So it's very offensive. It will attract other things to it. But the real concern is the potential impact on agriculture. And I think specifically to grapes. So that's really the biggest concern with them, other than being a just absolute nuisance.
Now you get into something serious if it's affecting the wine that is from the grapes that's grown here. But that said, yesterday we heard you shouldn't squish them, but I've heard you squish them, or instead you should scoop them, but scoop them to where? What do you do with them when you see them if you want to try to, you know, get rid of them? They seem kind of overwhelming in spots, though. It's almost fruitless to try.
Yeah, well, I've not heard the scooping. Unless you are trying to collect them for something. I know that there's some university research that's being done or some citizen science projects that are being done where they're asking for specimens. So there are plenty of specimens out there to be collected. But I think there's a little bit of a challenge in squashing them because they're pretty quick to jump away when you go to step on them. So not really sure about the value in scooping.
All right. So basically you say it's egg laying time for them, and that's that dew or the, as you said, or the mud they put around the trees and poles.
Yeah, that's correct. So mating usually happens, I think roughly end of August. So September is egg laying time. So they're kind of preparing for winter, looking to pass their offspring off to the next season. So they're looking to lay eggs. So you'll see those laid in the trees. Oftentimes you'll see them more so up in the branches, towards the distal end of the branches. But you will see them occasionally on the trunks and some of the more visible parts of a tree. They'll also lay eggs on other things, immobile things, maybe a deck or an RV that might be sitting for a while. So, but yes, they're laying those eggs in rows and then covering them up with wax, kind of a waxy secretion to prepare them for the winter.
Should we scrape that stuff off if it's accessible to us or not bother?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'd like to say that any little bit helps. So I think as a good citizen of the environment, it's probably a good idea to scrape those off. But the reality is that, you know, the impact is not going to be that great. Most of the egg masses that you would have in a tree are going to be inaccessible. So you won't be able to make that big of an impact.
So you don't want grandma climbing the trees with a butter knife. Okay, yeah, I got that. We're with Dr. Chad Gore, entomologist with Ehrlich Pest Control. Speaking of pests, before you go, we heard about this high rise where there's a mice infestation, and I felt bad for the poor residents, these women. One woman said she hasn't been able to sleep in her bed. She hears them in the wall. I thought mice would be pretty easy to handle when it comes to all pests. I mean, we talked about rats and bed bugs and spotted lanternflies and stink bugs, but what about mice? That should be something somebody could mitigate pretty easily, I would think.
Yeah, mice have really kind of blown up for us as a key pest, and we deal with them a lot more than we've ever dealt with them. They can be very difficult to control. I mean, you think about the size of a mouse, but the size of a hole that they can get into can be as small as a dime.
Right.
So, you know, the only limiting factor is the size of their head. So they can get in and out of some of the smallest openings. And that's why it's really best to make sure that even in apartments, your apartment is well sealed, that the building envelope in general is well sealed to try to keep them out in the first place.
Doc, always appreciate your input. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a great morning.
All right. Dr. Chad Gore again with Ehrlich Pest Control, an entomologist, and we always appreciate his time and advice. And here's the crazy part, Aaron. He loves bugs. I mean, he's fascinated by them. He's not repelled by them. And I have a sister who doesn't want to kill the mice. She had a mouse in her garage once. She asked me what to do, and I told her, put the old-fashioned trap with a little peanut butter. She goes, oh, no. She live catches them and then releases them back outside. I'm like, what are you doing?
People that do that truly are bold.
But, all right, I get it. From the P.J. Fitzpatrick Home Improvement Traffic Center, AAA Traffic powered by Bowser Genesis of Monroeville. I'm going to put Ellen on the spot. Live trap or snap 'em trap?
We don't catch and release here. Okay. I'll just say it, whether it's a mouse, stink bug, whatever. I'm so relieved to hear him. Yes, I was so glad we don't have to scoop. We're squishing. No. We're just squishing.
That was somebody just talking nonsense.
Urban legend. Don't do it. Squish him. All right, here we go. Parkway East inbound is really heavy for you. Back and right around Wilkinsburg as you head for those Squirrel Hill tunnels. Parkway West, that's the trying spot in the commute so far for your Thursday, backing at the top of Green Tree Hill there. 28's now in the game with some delays as you pass the Route 8 Aetna exit. Things ease up for you a smidge past Millvale, but then you have some heavy traffic between the 40th and 31st Street bridges. Our next AAA traffic on the fives at 6:55. I'm Ellen Gamble on 100.1 FM and AM 1020 KDKA.
AccuWeather says partly sunny today and a high of 83. Clear 58 tonight. We're at 63 at the airport now. This is the Big K Morning Show coming up. The campaign continues, and we'll have an update where the candidates are and where they're going. And one of the places they're going is Springfield, Ohio, and Aurora, Colorado. Former President Trump on Long Island last night.
I'm going to go there in the next 2 weeks. I'm going to Springfield and I'm going to Aurora. You may never see me again, but that's okay. Got to do what I got to do. Whatever happened to Trump? Well, he never got out of Springfield.
I'm not sure why. And then Marty posted another sound bite from last night.
So I'd call up my wife and I'd say, baby, who could draw crowds? Nobody can draw crowds like me. Nobody, not even close. I'm the greatest of all time, maybe greater even than Elvis, because Elvis had a guitar. I don't have a guitar. Elvis had a guitar. I don't have the privilege of a guitar.
So, back on the campaign. And by the way, Donald Trump will be visiting IUP, and he still said he's coming back to Butler County sometime in October, but we don't know where and when just yet. Obviously, we will let you know. In the meantime, the vice presidents, the running mates, are going to debate on October 1st, which is just around the corner. I mean, here we are. This is just a couple of weeks away in the middle of September, actually starting to push into the third week. It's September 19th already. Aaron, this is it. The last couple of days of summer. To me, it's been... you talk about news cycle.
Right.
You talk about what's been going on since July.
Yeah.
And summer for me has flown by.
Oh, it went so fast. It's going to be Christmas in a blink.
How about the sunniest summer I can ever remember? And I'm a native here.
Honestly, I know it was hot and we had some miserable, if you're outside all day kind of days, but it absolutely was such a beautiful summer.
Sunny, more sunshine than I can ever remember in a single season.
Right.
Put it that way. And 8:44 Sunday morning, the autumnal equinox. So you laugh.
The autumnal. It's just such a weird word.
Autumnal.
Yes.
It's the only time you use it.
Right.
You have the summer solstice. But now you have the autumnal equinox.
I'm going to try and be up, see if I can see it, because I don't pay attention to the moon
you
or
gotta
the,
look
that often.
I have
often.
This fascination with moon.
You do.
By the way, there is a lit mini moon coming starting next week. The Earth's closest celestial body is the moon. It will be joined by a new neighbor, a second moon. From September 29th until November 25th, astronomers calculate that this, they call it PT5, which is an asteroid that's dubbed the mini moon, will be looping around the Earth till it breaks free again from the gravitational pull. It'll be hard to see with the human eyes because it's only 10 meters across. But we have a second moon.
So weird.
I'm a guy that follows this stuff. I know you're thinking.
But it is
weirdo.
Cool. Thanks, Larry, for keeping us up to date on it, honestly.
Yeah. Any celestial stuff, I'm fascinated by it. I just think of all those people for all the years on the planet, up until they knew what it was, looked up and were like, oh, what's that?
So I'd call up my wife and I'd say, baby, who could draw crowds? Nobody can draw crowds like me. Nobody, not even close. I'm the greatest of all time, maybe greater even than Elvis, because Elvis had a guitar. I don't have a guitar. Elvis had a guitar. I don't have the privilege of a guitar.
Donald Trump on Long Island as his campaign continues last night, and with details on both candidates, where they're headed, CBS's Jared Hill.
Not known as a battleground state, although local Republicans and the former president are seeing this potentially as part of a battleground island with control of Congress up for grabs.
Amid heightened security yesterday, former President Donald Trump rallied in Long Island, a must-win district for House Republicans in a deeply blue state.
We can win New York.
Trump vowed to reverse a cap on the state and local tax deduction known as SALT, a cap he created with his 2017 tax cuts law. The former president also promised to visit two cities in Ohio and Colorado, claiming they're under siege by migrants.
They're destroying our country. We're getting them out.
In Washington, Vice President Kamala Harris slammed Trump's immigration proposals at an event for the Congressional Hispanic Caucus Institute.
They have pledged to carry out the largest deportation, a mass deportation, in American history. How's that going to happen? Massive raids?
In a possible blow to the Harris campaign, for the first time since 1996, the Teamsters Union declined to endorse the Democratic presidential nominee, choosing instead to endorse neither candidate. The union released internal polling showing more members support Trump.
It's a great honor. They're not going to endorse the Democrats.
But multiple local chapters of Teamsters have endorsed Harris, including in Michigan.
We can't allow Donald Trump to become president.
The former president is going to be staying in New York for a bit today, where he is set to meet with Jewish Americans in Brooklyn. The vice president is back in the battleground state of Michigan for a virtual unity call with Oprah.
CBS's Jared Hill in New York, and Donald Trump saying he's coming to IUP, Indiana University of Pennsylvania, and will come back to Butler at some point in October. The exact date and location is not known now, and as soon as we find out, we'll let you know. One of the big stories that affects everyone across the country is the Fed's rate cut. Now, normally, a lot of people, the Fed said this, the Fed said that, probably don't pay a lot of attention. But after 4 years, when they make a significant cut in interest rates, that's big news for everybody. Why? CBS's Joe Ling Kent.
After months of anticipation, the Federal Reserve aggressively reduced the cost of borrowing for the first time in 4 years with a half-point rate cut.
Our patient approach over the past year has paid dividends.
The central bank sending rates down from their more than 20-year high.
What message are you trying to send American consumers, the American people, with this unusually large rate cut?
I would just say that, you know, the U.S. economy is in a good place, and our decision today is designed to keep it there.
Inflation has cooled off from its peak of more than 9% in 2022 to 2.5% last month, as the jobs market shows signs of weakening.
Is the Federal Reserve effectively declaring a decisive victory over inflation and rising prices?
No, we're not. We're not saying mission accomplished or anything like that. But I have to say, though, we're encouraged by the progress that we have made.
The effects of this rate cut will take time to trickle down to consumers. For credit card debt, a half-point reduction will mean $2 off monthly interest payments on a $5,000 balance. Payments on a new five-year $35,000 car loan will drop by $8 a month. And monthly payments on a $50,000 home equity line would go down by $21.
I may need a new vehicle, but those are definitely considerations that you have to take in mind during these tough times.
This jumbo rate cut is welcome news for Gladys Ospina in California, who wants to update her car and help her brother buy his first home as soon as possible.
So it gives us options in the case of my brother to be able to help him and see him in a better position where he's able to buy his first home.
As for what's ahead, the Fed forecasts there will be two more rate cuts in November and December, totaling another half point, with more coming next year. But Chair Powell emphasized they are deciding meeting by meeting. Jolene Kent, CBS News, Washington.
So most of the experts thought that a half percent would be aggressive, but most were saying it would be a quarter of a percent. But they went for the full Monty, at least for now. And as you heard, expected to continue to lower interest rates into and through next year. That overall for consumers is good news, especially if you have variable rates that have gone up, up and up 5 points in the last 4 years. We'll be into the weekend and well beyond. And periodically, we check in with President and CEO of Visit Pittsburgh, Jared Bacher. Jared, good morning.
Larry, good morning.
Hey,
good
there you are. I can see you on the radio. I love this new technology, by the way. If you watch our stream at kdkradio.com, many of our guests are seen on the radio on video. So appreciate your time this morning, as always. How are you?
I'm well. How are you, Larry?
Good. And in our visits, let's start by talking about, you know, we're halfway through the month already and picking up a lot of steam. And Pittsburgh is in demand, a big travel destination, right?
It is. You know, right now, you mentioned the home opener for the Steelers this weekend, which is always exciting. That's certainly a telltale that we're going into fall very quickly. But there's some really good examples of all of the types of events that Pittsburgh hosts every year. You know, certainly from a leisure standpoint, the International Jazz Festival is also kicking off this weekend, which is a huge cornerstone in our annual cultural calendar. We just finished what I think is amazingly the first national championship of the Special Olympics ever held in Pennsylvania, was held right here in Pittsburgh. 2 weeks ago, they came and did their national softball championships here. So a really good example of how all kinds of sport comes into Southwestern PA and really helps benefit our economy, helps keep a lot of our people employed and supports our businesses. It's such a great effort to have these individual events right here in Pittsburgh.
So you've talked about Pittsburgh hosting a trifecta of events. So you got sports and then the business and leisure segments too.
Yeah, so the leisure we talked about with jazz, and then on the business event side, the convention perspective, from a convention perspective, our convention center is busy year-round, and this weekend is another really good example of how that building is utilized. So the National City and County Managers Association is in Pittsburgh holding their annual conference of 5,000 different individuals coming into the city. These are individuals who are running cities and counties all across the country. As we know, cities are facing some unprecedented challenges as they're coming out of the pandemic and going through recovery, dealing with the transition of office space and residential units and so forth. So much going on in these communities. So they're all coming together here in Pittsburgh this week to talk about what the future of cities and counties really look like.
And by the way, back to the Pittsburgh International Jazz Festival, it's going to be around the August Wilson Center in downtown. For people who don't know where that is, it's near the convention center. It's like a block away, right?
Exactly. They're going to close down Liberty Avenue again. That's where it was a few years ago, as you'll remember. It's really exciting to see it back in the heart of downtown.
So overall, how are we doing in Pittsburgh?
We're doing well. You know, there's so much going on, obviously, throughout this year. We're gearing up for U.S. Open next year, which is always a great opportunity to put Pittsburgh back in the spotlight. As you know, the U.S. Open, the USGA is committed to Pittsburgh for the next 20 or so years. So we're excited to see them. And then, of course, building up to the 2026 draft and the year following.
Let's talk about the draft, because that's been in the news just recently, too, because you need marketing support financially and how it's a great way to generate. And we saw Detroit and the number of people that went there and how much money they spent there. Give our audience an idea of what kind of economic impact this might have in Pittsburgh.
Sure. So the range of economic impact is, it varies from city to city. It depends on how much space and availability they have to welcome people in. Detroit was the biggest draft so far with over 775,000 people. Wow. They're estimating the economic impact being somewhere around $260 million for that community. So it's a massive footprint that they were able to deliver in Detroit. But obviously in 2025, it's going to Green Bay. It's a much smaller market. The numbers will probably be relatively small in comparison to what Detroit was able to deliver. And then when they come to Pittsburgh again, our footprint is much bigger, so we'll probably be closer to the numbers that Detroit was able to deliver.
Yeah, and thinking about that, there is a lot of work going on right now to prepare for that. That's not something that you wait to the last minute to do, right?
Oh, for sure. We've been working on this for the last 2 years, along with our colleagues at the Steelers. You know, this is a competitive bid process, and that's something that we have to keep in mind. When we started having conversations with the NFL in 2022, it would have been at this point, they had all kinds of options. And the NFL can take the NFL draft to any destination they want to in the country, whether it's an NFL market or not.
Right.
There's a lot of non-NFL cities that could still host this. You don't need a stadium. You don't necessarily need a home club. You just need a destination that's able to host it from a size perspective. So this is a competitive bid process. When we went to the Steelers, or when the Steelers came to us actually to start the conversation, we then had to go to the city and the county to say, look, we want to put in a bid to host the NFL draft in 2026 or one of the future years. In order to do that, we need to show the NFL that we've got some skin in the game from the local community. So at that point, the Visit Pittsburgh, we said we're going to commit $2 million to this effort. The county said, we'll throw in $3 million. The city said, we'll throw in $1 million. The corporate community said, we'll throw in $5 million.
Wow.
So we were able to put together a really aggressive bid package. And it's because of that, because of our infrastructure, because of the sports legacy that Pittsburgh has, all of that came together to be a winning bid for the NFL. And so those funds that we're able to collect, they'll go towards making sure that the NFL draft experience for all of those hundreds of thousands of people here on the ground is like none other. So we're really excited about where we've gone. The foundation is solid, and we're going to deliver one of the best drafts that the NFL has ever seen.
When you consider there's a potential for an economic impact of $250 million, that's why it's such a big deal, not to mention the imaging, which helps in the future then when you're trying to bring attention for conventions and other events to bring them to the region, right?
Absolutely. And when you think about this event, at the end of the day, we always have to remind ourselves that at the end of the day, this is an NFL event. To put this on, it's actually tens of millions of dollars that have to be put forward in order to make it a success. A lion's share of that, most of that, is with the NFL. It's their expenses. They cover those expenses. We put in some money here to make sure that the local community is ready, that we have the ability to market the destination in advance. So we have 700,000 people here on the ground, and making sure that the city is read up and ready to go.
Jared, appreciate the update. Thank you. Have a great weekend. Here we go, Steelers, this weekend.
Here we go. Thanks, Larry.
You got it. President and CEO of Visit Pittsburgh, Jared Bacher, brought to you by Visit Pittsburgh. By the way, if you haven't gone to the website, if you're, you know, a native, you live here, you go, wait till you go to visitpittsburgh.com. I think you'll be surprised at what resources you have on their website. Chinson of Animal General, LaSalle Plaza in Cranberry, is with us every Thursday at this time. Doc, good morning.
Good morning, Larry. How you doing?
Always good to see you, and you can see Doc, too, on the radio. If you go to kdkradio.com, check out our live stream. Any spotted lantern flies up north?
We haven't seen them yet. We're lucky, and I'm not bragging about that, so we haven't had them up in Harrisville.
You know, that said, just a sidebar, I was looking at them really closely, even though they're a nuisance. They're actually really beautiful.
Yeah, they are. They really are.
And they don't bite
people. They tell us to kill them, but it's a little bit hard when you see how pretty they are.
But they don't bite people. I think that's important if there's any.
Correct. And they're not toxic to our dogs and cats.
All right. That said, let's get to our questions from Tom in Greensburg. Dear Dr. Mike, my dog has started snoring loudly and occasionally gasps for air while it sleeps. Should I be concerned about sleep apnea? Boy, this is a great question.
Yeah, it is. You get these brachiocephalic, the short-faced breeds, the bulldogs, the pugs, the Boston Terriers, and their airways, because it's pushed in, there's not as much room, and so they can become somewhat obstructed. And what I tell people to do is watch them while they're sleeping to see if they're really gasping for air. That would be something you want to see your vet over. If they're tired all day because they're not getting restful sleep, and we all know what that's about, I would see your vet over that too. Allergies, it's imperative in these dog breeds to manage their weight. Don't let them get obese because that adds to it. Sometimes allergies cause congestion. You have to get those treated. So weight management, you know, allergies. And then if your veterinarian believes surgery might help, then surgery. Sometimes their noses are pushed in, stenotic nares, we call it. We can open them up and we can open up the palate in the back of the throat.
Well, obviously, we know many humans that have a CPAP device, but that's not practical for pets.
Right. We don't have anything like that for pets. You'd never be able to keep it on them.
No, absolutely not. That's a great question, Tom. Thank you. All right. Angela in Bethel Park. My cat seems to be drinking a lot more water than usual. Is this normal behavior as cats age, or should I be concerned? Thank you.
You know, I love that, Angela. That's a sign that something's going on, maybe with the kidney disease, diabetes, hyperthyroidism, urinary tract issues, UTIs, things like that. And even dehydration can cause that. But we call it PUPD. They start drinking more and then urinating more. Polyuria, polydipsia. Polyuria is urinating more. Polydipsia is drinking more. And when we see that, that's the body's telling us, it's trying to compensate for something. It's a good time to have a checkup. Your veterinarian is going to want to do some blood work and a urine analysis, and all of those things can be diagnosed on that blood test and urine test. So I would get that in. I think that's one of the early signs that we can help manage these and have them live long, give them a good quality of life and extend that lifespan and health span. So I would get it into the vet.
Another cat question, this one from Eric in Fox Chapel. My cat has started to refuse his dry food, but will eat wet food. Should I be concerned about dental issues or what might be going on?
You know, Eric, that's a good thought, thinking about dental issues. Cats get a problem. If you could, and try to do this safely, otherwise let your vet do it. If you can lift up the upper lip on your cat and look at those gums where the teeth come into the gums, if they look fiery red or really irritated or ulcerated, that's a bad condition in cats that we call gingival stomatitis. Gingivitis, everybody knows what that is. The gums are inflamed. Stomatitis is when all the mucous membranes in the mouth area are inflamed or ulcerated, and it's a bugaboo with their immune system. We think it's because of plaque on the teeth overstimulating that immune system, so we recommend dentals, but that could cause them not to want to eat hard food. Other things, tooth fractures. Sometimes it's just a fracture of a tooth, and they don't want to eat just like we wouldn't want to, and the soft food is easier. And then rarely we see oral tumors in cats, but that is something your vet will want to look for. So that would be a symptom that I would take in and have it examined. And you might be able to do that at home very quickly just to know how urgent it is.
Just curious, what are most people bringing their pets in for these days?
You know, I hate to say it. Fall allergies are the worst. So it seems like, you know, we say 70%, but it seems like 90% of the cases are allergy related.
Wow.
You know, skin issues, itching, scratching, coughing, sneezing. A lot of pets, cats and dogs. Frustrating for people too. So it's a, but we can manage those. We can manage those symptoms and make them feel better. And that's the one time of the year that I look forward to the frost, because we cut down some of the tick population and the allergies seem to abate a bit so that they get some relief for the wintertime.
Great info as always, Doc. Have a good weekend.
You too, Larry. Take care.
Dr. Mike Hutchinson, Animal General, LaSalle Plaza in Cranberry. You go to kdkradio.com. We've got a link to animalgeneral.net. And feel free, if you have a question for Dr. Mike, you can use our instant access at kdkradio.com. Top of this hour, we're going to talk to Pitt Hall of Famer Bill Hillgrove, voice of the Pitt Panthers, in his 51st year, getting ready for his 56th doing basketball, and getting ready for a chance for the Panthers to go 4-0 heading into this homecoming weekend. And speaking of Hall of Famers, the Pro Football Hall of Fame announced the list of modern era nominees for the class of 2025, and as we always are here in Pittsburgh, Steelers well represented. So here's the deal. A total of 167 players are eligible, including 8 Steelers who spent all or at least a portion of their career with the Steelers. Those nominated include kicker Gary Anderson. Remember Gary? He was steady. Linebacker James Ferrier. He was incredible. Nose tackle Casey Hampton. Linebacker James Harrison. And keep in mind, James, you talk about not giving up. I think he was cut by Bill Cowher like 4 times and just kept coming back. He was like Freddy Krueger and has arguably the most memorable play in a Super Bowl with that pick from the end zone going 100 yards against the Cardinals. Then fullback John Kuhn, defensive back Alan Rossum, not real familiar with those guys, but linebacker Mike Vrabel, who played for Bill Cowher and then went on to the New England Patriots, actually as a linebacker, ended up catching a couple of touchdowns in Super Bowls and is now a head coach. And, of course, here's the one who should be in, have no idea why he isn't, is Hines Ward. And it's a shame because if you look at his numbers matched up against anybody else and what he was able to do and was a Super Bowl MVP, Hines Ward should be in. So selection committee will meet again early next year in advance of the next Super Bowl, and there's no set number for any class of enshrinees, but the selection process bylaws provide that between 4 and 8 new members are selected. So 8 Steeler names on that list, and it'll be interesting to see if any of them get in. Like to see Hines Ward's got to get it. Come on, man. Thinking about the Steelers' home opener, the Chargers come to town Sunday at 1, and the Steelers are 2-0, 2 road wins. That's hard to get in the NFL, no matter who you are, back-to-back to open the season. So that was the big challenge. So looking forward to the game on Sunday. We'll talk to Bill Hillgrove about Pitt's homecoming and get his thoughts on the Steelers, too.
Fourth and 10. Here it is. Green back. Green. Plenty of time. Waits, waits, waits. Breaks contained. Throws the pass down the field. It's intercepted. And that's your ball game. Pulling that ball in front of the receiver was Kyle Lewis.
Let's go.
What a comeback.
What a comeback with a backyard brawl over West Virginia Saturday at Acrisure Stadium. And Pitt Hall of Fame voice of the Panthers, Bill Hillgrove, joins us via our video. Nice to be able to see Bill on our stream at kdkradio.com. Bill, what a weekend. What a whirlwind for you, partner. It started last Friday night with the Hall of Fame again. Congratulations. And paid off big time on Saturday.
Yeah, it ended up very well. And you and I and Pat Bostic and Doran Dickerson talked about it. You know, let's get through September 3-1 and we'll be in pretty good shape. Well, guess what? They have a chance to go 4-0, but what a weekend it was. I was worried about becoming emotional during that Hall of Fame ceremony on Friday, especially when they played the video, a tribute to Mr. Groot and myself, that I had re-watched it yesterday with my daughter, and we both had tears running down our cheeks. We avoided that on Friday night. Becoming emotional at public functions is something that can be selfish, and I was glad that I wasn't selfish. So all in all, what a weekend, and it was capped by that big Pitt win.
Well, again, salute to you, and it was nice to see the family of Dick Groat, his daughters there, and how much love there was in that room for both of you. And then that said, you had the other Hall of Fame inductees there on Saturday. We expected this to be, you know, a back-and-forth game, and this Pitt team is resilient, if nothing else.
And, I think that's a good word. Courageous might apply. Undaunted may apply. And Larry, some fans can be the cup is half empty. And I saw a post on the internet that said, well, if you had the other quarterback, you wouldn't get into these situations. And I laughed. I mean, that's the way some people look at life. But, it does show that, it's never over until that gun sounds. Of course, I don't even think they shoot a gun at the end of the game anymore. Whatever sounds at the end of the game, I guess a referee's whistle. But in that crowd of 66,000 plus, hard to hear a whistle in those emotions. But it was near the top in all the ones I've watched. And not only what Pitt West Virginia games, but of all the Pitt games I've been privileged to do, it doesn't get a whole lot better than what happened on Saturday.
And by the way, fans, if you look up on Pitt's social media, they did a GoPro of you and Pat Bostic, and they did a split screen of you calling plays, which is kind of cool. I know they've done this a couple of times before, like at the ACC championship game and others, but this time you can see the play while you're calling it and how excited Pat Bostic gets. I highly recommend you do that. That said, ACC Players of the Week for the third straight week in his third collegiate start, quarterback Eli Holstein is the Rookie of the Week, and this week also Quarterback of the Week in the conference. And linebacker Kyle Lewis, who had the game-ending pick, and then defensive back Donovan McMillan, who had a ton of tackles. The accolades now are building for Eli Holstein, the transfer from Alabama, redshirt freshman. Bill, you've seen 30 years of Steelers football as the color or the play-by-play analyst, and who does he remind you of?
Well, a couple of times as he shook off tacklers, Pat called it. He said that was very Ben-like. Now, he's not as big as Ben Roethlisberger, but in terms of the way he approaches the football game, he's a football player, not just a quarterback. And I think that means a lot. All he has to do, and I know, this is all new to him. At Cincinnati, the first time he ever played college football in front of a hostile crowd. Saturday, first time ever in the backyard brawl. You know, those emotions can kind of stymie you. And I think they did early on, where he was, especially in Cincinnati, very hesitant. He was thinking too much. He was trying to make the play instead of a play. And certainly in those last two drives on Saturday, he just made all good decisions. Running the ball, throwing the ball, and then, of course, celebrating at the end, as a leader should. You know, I hate to speculate on his future, but, you know, NIL looms large. And also, maybe after next year, the NFL draft may come calling. But we're glad we have him now, and at least for another year, the guy is as special as it gets.
And back to its homecoming this week, Youngstown State had a shocking upset when Duquesne beat them last week. They're coming in here kind of licking their wounds, but they've given Pat Narduzzi's teams now coaches 2-0 against them, but both of those games, one went to multiple overtime, so you can never take an FCS team too lightly.
Nope, and let's go back to, 2012, Paul Christ's first game?
Right.
Youngstown State actually won the game. Yeah, you can't have a letdown, and maybe there'll be one, but you still have to recover and let your talent take over. And I think Pat has done a great job with this group of people. You know, I saw it in the preseason and at training camp. There was a resolve with this group. You know, they're really bound and determined to prove that last year was a fluke. It was an aberration. And already they have as many wins as they did the whole season. So, you know, this team shows some promise.
Well, they go into the weekend 3-0. And if they're able to pull this off, a third of the regular season will be over. They'll be undefeated with a bye week and then start ACC conference play in North Carolina after that. Before you go, Bill, you watch the Steelers now like we do, which is fun. They're 2-0 with two road wins coming home to Acrisure. What's kind of your feel of this team this year?
Well, they're doing what they have to do to win. And again, some of the Steelers fans for whom the cup is half empty are saying, well, this offense of Arthur Smith's is starting to look like Matt Canada. And to them, I say, well, first of all, it's so tough to win on the road in the National Football League. And then we saw where a team that the Steelers beat in Atlanta in the opener rise up and smack down one of the contenders for the Super Bowl. And it's hard to win in that league, period, let alone on the road. But, you know, I think the playbook is a little thin for Justin Fields. I think if Russell Wilson ever gets the chance, I think it'll open up a bit. But, you know, that's just my view of things. I think they've done what it takes to win, and that defense certainly has controlled both those games.
Fun to watch. And, Bill, we'll see you at homecoming this weekend at Acrisure. Pitt, Youngstown State. Hall of Famer Bill Hillgrove. How's that sound, partner?
Thank you. H2P.
You got it. We'll get more from Pittsburgh Magazine's food editors coming up next on the Big K Morning Show. This is the Big K Morning Show, and I always look forward to our conversation with Pittsburgh Magazine's food editor, Christy Graver, and she is on our video mix, which you can see. I love this now. More and more of our guests are able to be seen and heard on the radio. You can go to kdkradio.com, check out our stream. Christy, good morning.
Good morning, Larry. How are you?
I'm good. This first story I thought was somebody making this up. A Ferris wheel on the Roberto Clemente Bridge. What is going on?
Why not? Because we don't have enough traffic. No. Well, I was always kind of bummed when Kennywood got rid of the Ferris wheel or the Wonder Wheel, whatever it was called years ago. But so for the first time in Pittsburgh's history, they're putting the 60-foot Ferris wheel on the Roberto Clemente Bridge. And it's all part of an 11-day Oktoberfest Pittsburgh celebration. And it runs from October 3rd to the 13th. So the Ferris wheel will be the centerpiece of this all-ages carnival, and it will feature food and vendors and games and activities, and there will be a big beer garden in Market Square. And Market Square will also be transformed into a Bavarian village with be hosting games like stein holding and keg lifting races and barrel rolling and all that other German activities. So it should be a lot of fun.
I think, now obviously it's temporary, but I know Lucas Pyatt and his family, that esplanade we've heard about they're going to do along the Ohio River on the other side of the casino.
Yeah.
Part of the plan is to have a permanent big wheel along the river there. And for those that don't know, the Ferris wheel was invented in Pittsburgh by Mr. Ferris.
Yes. another Pittsburgh original, you know. We've got lots.
I invite you to tune in tomorrow. Speaking of Oktoberfest, we have a resident who is Pat Septek, our news editor, who is, well, he bought new lederhosen last year for his, and he's coming in tomorrow with his accordion, and we're going to have a in-studio tailgate for Steelers home opener. All right. Kelly O. I just saw Kelly O. Kelly O's Diner is branching out. And for those that don't know, Kelly O was known nationally, right? She was on one of those big shows.
Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. And she was on several times. And actually, she's been to like Guy's house and like
Guy Fieri.
Her daughter told me. Yeah, she her daughter told me that she drove MC Hammer back to his hotel after eating at Guy's house. I don't know, which is like the coolest thing ever. I don't know. But Kelly O is really awesome. She's been around for a very long time. 2001, I believe, she opened up her first diner in the North Hills. I was just there last week. But now she's branching out into the bar business. She's going to be opening Ozone Bar and Grill, and it's going to be in Warrendale, and it's going to be right next to one of her namesake diners. So it'll be an upscale sports bar with lots of appetizers and shareable plates and like Pittsburgh staples. She's really known for the Halusky at Kelly O's. So really good comfort food and stuff like that. And also this year, they're doing a Rocktoberfest on October 5th at the Warrendale location. And there'll be live music, raffles, door prizes. And it's a fundraiser for an employee who has suffered some medical problems. So they're raising money for her. So really good person, really good Pittsburgher. So
she is. Kelly O is special and good for her. Yeah. All right. What is the Remnant City Rug Bug?
The Rug Bug has been around since 1970, and you could see it, and it's always parked outside of the flooring store on Route 51. And I've been obsessed with this thing for years. My dad had a Volkswagen Beetle. He still has one. So I've always loved the Rug Bug. They decorate it with carpeting, and it's been like a ladybug. It's been decked out in bicentennial red, white, and blue. Right now it's a bird. They're they're actually doing a new one. They'll have a new one parked soon, but the Rug Bug is just like a Pittsburgh thing, and it's an original, and I just love it.
Yeah,
also in Pittsburgh history today.
Yes, what happened?
My dad and my uncle were born in 1948, so
oh well, happy birthdays. You know, we have the Big K Morning Show birthdays early in the show, so next year we'll have to include them.
Yes.
All right. Twins. You got a lot going on. Christy, we'll talk to you next Thursday. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Larry. Bye-bye.
Have a great weekend. Christy Graber, read all about it at PittsburghMagazine.com. This is the Big K Morning Show. Cannabis. People that support this prefer to say cannabis because some feel that marijuana has a negative connotation because for so many years, including now, recreational use in the state of Pennsylvania is not permitted. Tamira Rush, you had the story of this bipartisan bill, 846, in Harrisburg that's trying to change that. Good morning.
Hi, House Bill 2500.
2500.
Yes. House Bill 2500, sponsored by Republican Representative Aaron Kofer.
And?
And basically, all the neighboring states are doing it. So, Pennsylvania.
Ohio, New York. New Jersey, Washington, D.C., Maryland.
So, why can't?
The entire country of Canada.
Yes.
So, it's a little wink in a way, because with the medical marijuana in place, if you walk downtown or in a lot of public places, let's be honest, you smell that for
in
million.
The air.
Yeah, you just do.
It's everywhere.
Sometimes in traffic, you're just in your car
right.
at a light or something. So people are utilizing it, which, by the way, they shouldn't be in their car doing it. But, okay, this, how much, and talking to the people that you talked with, how much push do you think this bill really has to finally get it over the top?
I think it's in position to move through. I mean, you have people who are pro, you know, people have put themselves in position to want, you know, to be a part of whatever is happening, right? So you have all these neighboring states that are doing it. So why can't we? You have people who are ordering all kinds of things online. You have people that are in, you know, use gummies for medical purposes. So there are things in place that a lot of people out here now are saying, hey, let's just move this forward. So they basically are saying there are ways the money that they have coming in could fund local police departments. That would be a great thing, right? Programs that are out there to help people when they are in certain situations. So the monies that they are saying that they will receive from legalizing this could basically go towards programs that are beneficial.
It seems like they've done that in part to try to say, hey, just like they did with the Pennsylvania lottery, which has been in decades now, but they said at one point, gambling of any sort will never be legal in Pennsylvania.
Right.
And it started with the lottery,
right,
which the state operated. And then to kind of get it through, they said, hey, we're going to use the funding to help senior citizens.
But it also is beneficial to people who had charges and were charged with marijuana
now,
possession.
That's a really important point, Tamara, because there have been so many people who've had their lives in many ways ruined because of, you know, let's just say in their younger days, not that a lot of adults use it
correct.
Now, illegally, but it's out there and it always has been out there. But you get this charge, and then when you apply for a job, if you're being honest, if they background search and check you,
correct,
this shows up, that eliminates you from a lot of opportunities.
Absolutely. I think it's a great opportunity for people to get back on track so you can apply for resentencing. And, I mean, it moves the ball down. It puts people in position in place that they can say, hey, I've done something in my life, but just give me
just
a second
one
chance.
One thing is holding me up.
Absolutely.
From advancement. They want their record expunged is the word, yeah. And then
expunged.
It's legally.
It's a great word.
Hey, I got expunged. Meanwhile, John Fetterman, when he was lieutenant governor, traveled to all 67 counties in the state. And he said that every one of the counties voted. While some people were still against it, the majority of people were like, okay. At the federal level, though, it's still a class one, which is they're trying to change that, too.
Right.
It makes it difficult. But now we have almost half the states
that are aligned.
Right.
So why can't Pennsylvanians? So
and it'll be interesting to see if this bill, 2,500.
25 hospitals.
846 was an older
bill
about having, you know, they basically decriminalized it. In many places, including here in the city of Pittsburgh.
Yes, that's why the representative's bill is more popular, because people are on board with this. So as the ball turns, we will see where things stand at this particular time. But listening and reading and hearing, this is something that people are looking at like, hey, you know, why is Pennsylvania always lagging behind?
Well, Josh Shapiro, our governor, said, at some point, I mean, he'll support a bipartisan bill. So this may actually happen.
It's in the works.
And in the next question is going to be, whose umbrella will this be under to control it in the state?
Well, yeah, they were basically, I'm reading, they said they had it so that you have an organization that will allocate the monies to several programs. And one of those programs that I believe would be beneficial to something like this happening is our local police departments. The money, the funding that they get, local police departments would benefit from some of that money that's allocated from this taking place.
And presumably they would also benefit from, now they could, you know, from, you know, they used to chase down people with pot, mm-hmm. marijuana, or cannabis. And now they wouldn't have to have that concern.
Yes, it basically says the bill would place a tax on cannabis products, which would fund several different agencies, including prevention, addiction prevention, recovery, treatment services, and local law enforcement.
But there is a theory that they might use the Liquor Control Board already in place to put it under their umbrella, which is a little bit controversial in and of itself. Now, we'll see if this gets real traction.
I think so.
Tamara, thank you.
You're welcome.
Tamara Rush, reporting on the Big K Morning Show. We're going to talk to the executive director of Light of Life Rescue Mission and ask about this housing story that you may have heard about. So Sarah Inamorato, our Allegheny County executive, said early in the summer, actually it was back in June, that she wanted in 500 days to find 500 affordable housing places. So we'll have an update on what that is today, 100 days in, and what we anticipate. And I'll tell you, Jarrell Gilliam, who is the executive director, really knows this world, knows this space. They deal with people every day. There's, you know, homelessness for many people misrepresented, and there are people dealing with addiction issues. There are people dealing with mental health issues, but it's not all that. You can't put everybody into the same bucket. And bottom line is, you've seen the tents around town. It's been well documented by Marty Griffin and the Get Marty team with Patrick O'Connor around the region. We've seen videos from other people. I don't remember a time living here, you know, I was born and raised in Pittsburgh, we've ever had this issue to this level. Now, that said, we're no different than any other city. In fact, many other cities have it far worse, especially south in Florida and in California, Oregon, and Washington State. But still, something needs to be done, needs to be addressed. So is this working so far, I guess, is the question. And we'll check in with Light of Life Rescue Mission, who deals with this on a daily basis. Sarah Inamorato, Allegheny County Executive, said 100 days ago, trying to find affordable housing to help the homeless issue in part, and issued a report yesterday that they've created 98 housing units and house 75 people in the program's first 100 days. Curious how this is working in the eyes of someone who's in this world each and every day helping those who are struggling. And joining us is the executive director of Light of Life Rescue Mission, Jarrell Gilliam. Welcome back to KDKA.
Hello, Larry. It's always a pleasure to be with you and your audience.
So your assessment after the first 100 days, since you are actively involved in helping those who are living on the street or without housing and trying to help them get back into a safe place.
Well, it is commendable that, again, that there was an effort to bring attention to this crisis, and I applaud Sarah and the county for escalating this. What my concern is that it's just not enough. It's a great first step, but it should be, in my opinion, a step in with a series of other steps to really address the issue. It's not just that we need these beds, but we need to focus on the people who are having severe mental health. They really pose the greatest threat to themselves and to others. And so that requires us being able to increase our capacity within our county to help those who are either undiagnosed or untreated mental health. And you know, these beds are not going to be helping them specifically. And then we need to be
be concerned with preventing people from entering homeless. I think I talked to you last time. You know, there are still, we are averaging around 50 families a day that are being evicted. And so people are just not able to keep up anymore. And so we have to come up with plans that can work with landlords to give people time to get caught up. We have to create beds for people who need supportive services, as well as the 500 and 500 that the county is bringing aboard.
Jarrell, I want you to repeat that, because I think that is a stunning number. You're saying 50 families will be evicted. How often?
It's daily. That's our average here in our county.
In the county, and, just Allegheny County alone?
Yes. Yes. We saw this spike happen right after the pandemic. And when once the eviction moratoriums, once that was lifted, what began to happen was there was a backlog with landlords, and there was a misunderstanding among some seniors as well as people in those families that there was a forgiveness of their rent, which was not the case. And we were trying to get that word out. So many of them, as soon as the moratorium was lifted, they were given notices. And so there's a backlog in the courts. There's actually a website where you can track the number of cases that are coming up and how quickly they're moving through. And so these people are having to find alternatives. Now, not all of them end up on the street. Some of them are able to connect with families and others, but some are ending up on the street because we know they're showing up at our emergency shelter.
Can you give us some sense, when you talk about, now we understand there are people who have challenges of addiction on multiple levels. There are people who have mental illness issues. But what about families with children who are completely innocent or completely what other people would be considered a more normal family environment? How many of those people are out there?
Yeah, that population, I don't have a stat in front of me, Larry. I can look that up and try to get back to you. But that's the population that's growing. I was meeting just 2 weeks ago, me and a small team, we went to Skid Row out in L.A., and we spent some time with some thought leaders out there. And the manager of our women's shelter was explaining to me the challenges that they're having at our shelter here in Pittsburgh, and the surprise of seniors now that are becoming homeless. No history of mental health, no history of drug abuse, yet they are losing their ability to stay in their homes, and there is a crisis for affordable housing in the senior high rises as well, and they're out of places to go. So they end up in our shelter. She also told me of a story recently where an adult child dropped off a mother, which would be a grandmother to us, saying that she could no longer take care of her mother. And it was heartbreaking for her. She's working multiple jobs, but just could not do it anymore, and dropped her mother off at our shelter for us to try to find housing for them. And what I'm concerned is that as the weather changes, that this is going to get worse, Larry. And so we really need to escalate this and treat it as a housing crisis. In some cities, they've actually declared a state of emergency, which has cleared the way for an easing on some of the regulations so that builders can get in their rehab places and convert spaces into living spaces.
How do you stay up, Jarrell, dealing with this heaviness every day?
Well, I'm a man of faith, and there's a lot of people in this city that pray for me and pray for our team. And another thing, Larry, I wish you could have been there just 2 days ago. We celebrated another graduation, and we do those twice a year. I wish our city could come and see those. But in those moments, we are energized because we see in front of us people who once were living in tents, people who
once were addicted, who thought they would never be reunited with their families, with their children again. And here they are in a festive evening, graduating with family members, children, all cheering them on. And man, you talk about a hope shot. That's a hope shot for us. And when we see that, we say, you know what, let's keep going. We want to do it one person at a time and continue to move forward this great work.
Well, God bless you, brother. And thank you for the work you do every day. You're a special person, and it takes somebody like you to reach and help. If you can help Light of Life Rescue Mission, please do. Jarrell Gilliam, thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you for your work as well, Larry.
To be continued, and we will continue to tell. With us all week, Paul Rasmussen vacationing back on Monday, but you're not here tomorrow, are you?
It's Rob Taylor tomorrow. I'll be here tomorrow afternoon instead.
Doing your reporting duties.
I'll be filling in for Paul, actually, Paul Alexander tomorrow. So one Paul to another.
Oh, you're doing afternoon anchoring. Well, you're just anchor thing. Is it heavy when you anchor?
Not really.
Aaron, what did we learn about David? Now, you have only been here a few months, so you just met David, right?
Right.
And there's three takeaways from working with you, and I've known you for a long, long time, David. One is A, we know you're an anti-sandwicher.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Of any kind, right?
Right. Right.
Two, you had a pet raccoon as a child.
Yes.
Did you have a leash for that raccoon, or was this just
tried to do that.
Was it a... Oh,
yeah.
You did?
Yeah. Harness. I only had him for about 6 months, though.
That's a long time.
It really is.
Because they don't seem like they'd be very friendly. Was this... did you have a name for your raccoon?
Herman. Yeah. So basically what happened, my dad cut down trees for a living. He was a woodsman. And when they cut down one of the trees, they accidentally killed the mother with the raccoon. So my dad, my uncle, and the other guy that they worked with each took one of the baby raccoons with them.
And you raised it since birth?
No, probably. I can't even remember, but he was probably, maybe about the size of a puppy when we got him.
Tiny Herman.
Yeah.
What happened to him?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I never really knew for sure. You know, if you want to get the violin music up for this.
Oh, no.
Go ahead. So let it out.
Well, it's actually interesting. So for many, many, many years, I thought something bad happened to him. Because one day where I grew up, we did not have heat in the school building where we were going. So they sent us home early. And I remember it was Washington's birthday. And I came home and I went to go get him out of his cage and he wasn't there anymore. And for years, I thought somebody had taken him.
But he escaped.
No.
Because from you, Shawshank.
No, what happened, I didn't realize this apparently until my dad's funeral, actually, a couple of years back, is that he took him back to the woods once he grew up.
Oh, so your dad freed him.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's actually really sweet.
I mean, my dad died in 2019, and that was the first I...
You didn't know all these years you worried about where was Herman.
Yeah.
Wow.
The name.
Okay,
where was Herman?
So we anti-sandwicher, had a pet raccoon he rescued for his dad, a woodsman. And then number three is we found out we were talking about the super harvest moon, the other celestial things we were discussing. And David, you said you never look up. You never look up.
So no, I told you I look down whenever I go jogging, because if you're doing that in the dark, you have to make sure you're not going to hit an uneven sidewalk.
Fourth takeaway.
Does this show up on the camera here? Yeah, do you see that?
You have a knee. Yeah. You had an operation.
Well, that was my eighth torn ACL surgery, but there's a scab there from when I fell down in January one day, and it still hasn't completely healed because the sidewalks in Shadyside are not even.
Just so you know, I'm not charging for this therapy session. But
it's like Charlie Brown going to Lucy, of all people.
And then one bonus thing is we learned you're a slow jogger.
Yes.
So you just kind of do like a...
No. It's not running in slow motion. It's jogging at a walking
pace. There's a form. He said there's a specific form.
So you want to land, again, if the camera is there. So basically,
he's showing
like
us.
This. So you're landing on the
balls of your feet.
Exactly. Because that's, if you jump up and down, that's where you naturally land. So you don't want to land on your heel. So you want to land there and just keep going at that steady pace. And... it allows me to do, I mean, if I have the time, I can sometimes go up to 11 miles.
Whoa. That's pretty awesome.
It's been a year or two since I've done that.
I have learned so much this week working with you. David, thank you. Sure. Have a good week. Can you get someone to video your slow jogging, please? I'd love to share it with Marty and our audience. Right, Aaron?
Oh, yes.
Oh, by the way, hey, Patrick. Patrick Septak is our news editor. Patrick, he's working. He's going to come in tomorrow. We're going to have a little in-studio tailgate party with his accordion for the Steelers home opener. But he has a friend. He's got Daphne just sent me a message. Daphne's a little upset. I thought you guys would be talking about the Golden Bachelorette. The first episode must have aired. We missed it. And she says, I'm heading to the dentist, so maybe it will be a topic during the rest of your show. I'll have to use rewind feature because the Novocaine wears off. And then,
what a detailed message.
Daphne says she's up in Slippery Rock.
Is that Pat's fan or is that your fan?
No, that's Pat. Oh, no. She's a Pat. She loves Pat. P.S. Bill Hillgrove is amazing. So well-spoken and knowledgeable. Love him. Thanks for having him on. So Daphne's having some type of tooth issue. She's on Novocaine, but okay, Pat. I didn't want you to worry out there, but she'll be locked in tomorrow when you bring your amazing accordion in. Wow. Who do we bill for this therapy? Core Him. And tonight at the Fairmont Steel City Awards Dinner for the Marine Corps Scholarship Foundation, I'm honored to be the MC. And it's all because of Major General Pete Tulare, who is a Butler native, graduate of Clarion University, who served our country in the Marine Corps for 34 years at the highest levels through Operation Iraqi Freedom, Operation Enduring Freedom, among many others. And he joins us on the Big K Morning Show. General, good morning.
Larry, good morning to you. I have to sit down after that great Marine Corps hymn. I was at attention while that was playing.
I figured. Thanks for taking time. You and John Banasek, who has won 3 Super Bowls with the Steelers back in those great days where they had 4 and 6 years, a Marine, and he and you introduced me to this tremendous organization tonight. So share with our audience what the purpose and mission is this evening.
Yeah, let me do that, Larry. First of all, congrats to John Banasek for serving on our committee, 3-time Super Bowl champ and Corporal United States Marine Corps. So he's just done a phenomenal job. Tonight it's at the Fairmont in Pittsburgh. Starts at 6:30. And I want to thank you, Larry, for this is your 4th consecutive year hosting us with your Master of Ceremonies abilities. You're just phenomenal. And I can't thank you enough. And matter of fact, in the city, we've made you one of our honorary Marines. You had big shoes to fill. You had Jim Roddy, who recently passed away, who was a former Allegheny County executive, also a Marine. And again, Larry, big shoes to fill, but congrats to you for doing a phenomenal job. Listen, like all the service, we all make legendary sacrifices in our services, going to war, whether it be peace or war. And we also want to ensure we want to take care of our children. And that's what we're doing tonight. So the Marine Corps Scholarship Foundation has been honoring Marines and educating their children for 60 plus years now. And what we do here in Pittsburgh, it's called the Steel City Campaign. And we've been doing this for approximately a decade here in Pittsburgh. It's part of a larger organization, the Marine Corps Scholarship Foundation, which is nationwide. Those who get the scholarships, the children are children of Marines, Navy corpsmen, or chaplains. You have to have a cumulative GPA of 2.0, and which is a threshold for income. So those that are needs-based, that meet the qualifications of a 2.0 or greater, they are given a scholarship in this particular program. And just to give you an idea, over the last several years, we've given out over $220 million in scholarships over the past 60 years. This year alone, we've given out $11.7 million to those in need. We're helping over 2,882 children, and 100% of our applicants are awarded a scholarship, Larry. And the average GPA for our graduates is around a 3.43, 91% graduation rate. Think about that. 91% of the students that get this award and this scholarship are graduating at 91%. To sum it up, anybody that has a child that's in the Marine Corps or the Navy Corpsman or in the religious program, if they're qualified, they will get a scholarship. All it requires is a 2.0 grade point average or better. And so this last 10 years, we've given out over $172,000 in scholarships locally here in the tri-state area, 20 from Pennsylvania, 20 students, 2 from Ohio, and 4 from West Virginia. So that kind of sums up, Larry, you know, what this event is about and what it's ultimately for. But we'll also be giving an award tonight that I'd like to share also with your audience. But that really is a phenomenal job done by the Steel City and also the Marine Corps Scholarship Foundation nationwide.
And John Surma is the recipient of the Semper Fidelis Award. Tell us a little bit the meaning of this award and John Surma's dedication here, especially in our region.
Certainly, yeah. The Marine Corps Scholarship Foundation Semper Fidelis Award, it's given to those individuals who demonstrate a recurring commitment to an effort which contributes to the betterment of our society. Some individuals that have received that are former presidents of the United States. Here locally last year, it was given to Rocky Blyer, four-time Super Bowl champion with the Steelers, obviously a hero during Vietnam, great representative of our veterans. So Rocky got it last year, and in the past we've also given that award to other individuals here in the local area. But John, he's the chairperson for the board of directors of the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center. He has been a phenomenal individual. He's really done a great drive for us to bring in a lot of donations from those in the tri-state area. He's going to get this award tonight. We're very honored to give it to him, and we're very thankful to him, what he does for the local community, now tonight for the United States Marine Corps. What a great individual. Look forward to honoring him and his family.
And John Surma, former CEO of United States Steel, so he was known internationally as well. And General, I appreciate the kindness, but I got to tell you, Jim Roddy, who just passed in the last year, was a mentor to me. I met him through Jack Bogut, actually, who sat in this air chair 15 years in a row before John Cigna and I. And I still stay in touch with Jack Bogut. And Jim Roddy, after his Marine Corps service, continued to serve this community. And he was the master of MCs. And I learned a lot from him. So I'm very honored to be there to recognize him, John Surma, and the deserving scholarship awardees. It's a great night. If you can help, Steel City Awards, the Marine Corps Scholarship Fund, please do. General Pete DeLary, I will see you promptly tonight, sir.
I look forward to seeing you, Larry, and let's have a great evening together.
By the way, this is one of the most organized events I ever have been a part of, and I love that. It's on time. Outstanding, General. Thanks.
All right, sir. Take care. See you tonight.
So I'd call up my wife, and I'd say, baby, who could draw crowds? Nobody can draw crowds like me. Nobody, not even close. I'm the greatest of all time, maybe greater even than Elvis, because Elvis had a guitar. I don't have a guitar. Elvis had a guitar. I don't have the privilege of a guitar.
I woke up and saw Marty Griffin's post and...
Didn't Elvis sing Jailhouse Rock?
Oh, He was kidding, right?
Just saying. That dude needs to be drug tested now. That brother needs Jesus.
Coming up, Marty, 10 till 2.
Damn.
You have a special guest in studio.
Big shot.
Big shot.
Big.
Big.
Not as big as you, Larry.
No, big. This is big.
Hey, quit picking on Balderado. Making fun of him and his little squirrel. What the hell was it?
It was a raccoon named Herman.
Uh-huh.
And?
Talking about him looking at the sky.
He's an anti-sandwicher.
Sandwiches. He's walking around here mumbling. I'm just saying.
He doesn't look up and he slow jogs, but... Everything
wow.
else is no.
He's building
normal.
A case is what they call it, Larry. Hey, let me read something. It's important.
What do you got?
And this is actually fascinating. In the 4 years studied, the Pittsburgh Steelers brought in $2.6 billion in direct and indirect spending within the city of Pittsburgh. $3.4 billion to Allegheny County and $3.1 billion to the state of Pennsylvania. Yet, we have city leaders, present company excluded, of course, whining about the city spending $1 million to prepare for the NFL draft. Wah! My man, if somebody says to me and Larry, give us $1 million, we'll give you back $3 billion, I will be selling some stuff. You know what I'm saying?
We'll be interested.
Don't you think,
to hear,
sir?
Yeah, well,
what kind of pet did you have when you were a kid, Larry?
At one
in your
point,
pocket,
I had a hermit crab. We had those chicks at Easter a couple of years.
No, I had plenty of chicks, Larry.